E1, number 27A.
So, here he felt first the impulsion of life to expound principles, to teach that principle. And so he began with his Beatitudes, those seven Beatitudes in which he laid down the fundamentals of his teaching, namely, blessed are ye, and then, because this and this will be your reward. All these blessings are always stating, if you take that attitude, that divine attitude, if you have that divine consciousness, then you will get the proof of it, or the demonstration of it, the reward. All these Beatitudes are written in this way. So that he began to teach through the first seven Beatitudes those divine states of consciousness which present the Word of God. You know that the seven Beatitudes are stated in the word order, giving the mental or the spiritual attitude which brings blessing demonstration. Then it comes to truth. I have written here, truth demands Christ science instead of right thinking. In order to establish harmony in man, and I put there Jesus' teaching versus human opinions. If you read those verses there after those Beatitudes, you noticed in there always a fundamental tone, a common denominator, which would read like this, that he is stating constantly the teaching of the Old Testament, of the law, the teachings of the prophets, the teaching of the scribes, the teaching of the Pharisees, and said, ye have heard that it was said by them of old time. So he restated, so to say, the old way of thinking, the Old Testament, and then he would say, for I say unto you. See, he compared constantly the old teaching of the law, the prophets, the scribes, and Pharisees, and then that, but I say unto you. As if he would say, this is now past, now comes a new paradigm, and the new paradigm reads very differently, but I say unto you. And so he was constantly saying what he was saying, namely, be therefore perfect as your Father which is in heaven is perfect. You see, he changed the paradigm of the old way of thinking, thinking up to God. That's the Old Testament. Thinking up to God. And changed that into the new paradigm and said, but I say unto you. He gave now the truth, the factual sense of being, and said, you are as perfect as the Father in heaven is perfect. Isn't it terrific? So, again, let's read what I said here. Yes, truth demands Christ science instead of right thinking. Then, as we read further on, we come to a sense of love in it. I epitomized it like this, love fulfills the science of man through the science of life and the science of the one being. He gives two great expositions, namely, what is the science of life, and afterwards, what is the science of the one being. In the science of life, it is really that Jesus teaches the science of life as a new style of life, in contradiction to a hypocritical style of life. It is there where Jesus teaches his new style of life in contrast to ye hypocrites, ye heathen, and what the other people say, and therefore takes up all those facets of human life, like giving alms, like praying, fasting, laying up treasures, supply and judging. All that he brings up and shows what the people say and do, and then shows what his new teaching is in those matters. But our life, he says then, or brings out, that our life is really in and of God. That our life, our style of life, is not to improve our life by giving alms, by prayer, by laying up treasures, by supplying, churching, and so on. He shows now always a higher sense, because he came and said, but I say unto you. So he says, the Father shall reward thee openly. You don't have to give alms. The Father supplies. Your Father knows what things ye have need of before ye ask him. So don't try to supply the poor people with what you think they need. Your Father knows what ye need. Can you see, he always gives that extra position of a human way of living a good life, and then of the divine way of life. He says, your Father will forgive you. When he takes up the question how the scribes say you should forgive and so on, he says, no. Your Father will forgive you. Your Father, he says here, your Heavenly Father feedeth them. You don't need to give and give to the poor, because giving and giving to the poor is just to put a lot of things into a barrel without bottom. That's all there is. What you put in on the top goes out on the bottom. But he can see that there is a higher sense of giving and of receiving, namely that what the Father gives, and the Father gives us the sense that we don't need to beg, that we have fullness, that we have a full consciousness, and therefore that we don't need to beg and to receive alms. And then finally he shows the signs of being, which is rather very fundamental then, in the end, where he says, really, your way, the straight is the gate, the word is straight is the gate, and it shows the Christ and says the fruits of the false prophets, and shows the fruits of the true prophets. Then he shows Christianity, that is to do the will of the Father and not to do something humanly. That is Christianity, to do the will of the Father. And finally, he says, build on the rock. Build your house on the rock and not on sand. Just giving a final sense of the signs of being. So can you see, in principle, what makes Jesus give his Sermon on the Mount? Well, there was first the impulsion of life, which said, you go and do it. You go and preach and teach and heal. Don't ask an authority if you are allowed to do it or not. He just stepped on the pulpit and says, here I am, this prophecy is fulfilled today. So the whole Testament, Old Testament, goes really that sense already, that David, when he was hungry, he really took the showbread and ate them, though he was not allowed to do it because it was reserved for the priest and for the clergy. And he said, nothing doing. I'm going to take it. There is nothing too holy for me not to take it. I saw that as a young boy, and I took it. I took it. I didn't wait until somebody gave me the right to say what I want to say. When once the idea of science touched me, actually it was the idea of divine science that touched me, in my 20s, and I never turned back, I knew I had it. And it was only a measure of letting it grow and unfold, the seed within itself, tenderly waiting and letting it unfold, and just letting every new revelation drop out of that whole matrix of immortality constantly coming forth. And naturally I could see afterwards that that is the only way the principle operates. Because life says to principle, you express yourself. And truth comes to that principle and says, state your new paradigm. Don't build on the old paradigm, what the scribes and the prophets and the law and the Pharisees and etc. have said. Go and state your new paradigm. But I say unto you, truth, the factual. And finally you come to a sense of love where you feel, golly, what truth is presenting is actually the whole comforter of love. Namely, the whole science of life and the science of being. That is the comforter, divine science. And when he had done that, then comes in the Bible a terrific break in the story. You just can see it from one verse to the next, that the completely different theme is now under discussion. Namely, the new theme of life. But that we'll do tomorrow. So today we want to continue with Matthew's story. And we have seen that Matthew is telling the story of the word, namely of mind with the creative idea, then with spirit, the baptism of spirit, with soul, the temptations, the identification of Jesus' mission, and then with principle, the teaching, the Sermon on the Mount. And each time, in each of these four subjects, we could see that that subject was impelled by life, truth, and love. And now we come to the fifth subject of life, and again we want to see that life is impelled by the law of life, truth, and love. In reading the Bible you see at once a great change taking place in the stories, because now you get all the healing aspect of his teaching. After he had presented the principle on the Sermon on the Mount, he shows now that this principle is practical and therefore is demonstrable. I summarized life here as life, truth, and love demonstrate the fullness of life. So the fifth subject gives us a sense of the fullness of life. That's the life subject. But that fullness of life is impelled through absolute Christian science by life, truth, and love. So the first subject from the absolute standpoint here I have summarized, the impulsion of life demonstrates the fullness of life individually. It gives now a sense that the impulsion of life can use the individual to demonstrate the fullness of life. And we get at once that sense that individual healings can be achieved through that individual life power. You will see now that he recounts quite a few healings in that tone of life. But all these healings have something in common, namely that in each one of them he shows how he practiced the life principle as an individual, he, Jesus, and for an individual. It has a great sense of individuality in it, and in each of these cases it is Jesus' recognition of the life power that initiates the healing. For instance, I just pinpoint those healings. You know them from your Bible story, but I just pinpoint them and you will feel then how it is always Jesus' consciousness of the life power that is healing. We have the healing of the leper, where he came to Jesus and said, "If thou wilt heal me." See, he addressed Jesus individually and said, "You can do it. You can do it." And Jesus answered, "I will. Be thou clean." Do you hear the appeal to the individual Jesus and then Jesus saying, "Yes, I will"? You have the healing of the centurion's servant when the centurion came to Jesus and asked him to help his servant. And the centurion just said to Jesus, "Speak the word only." You see, he put all the trust again in Jesus, and Jesus said, "I will come and heal him." Can you see, he gathered again his life power and says, I will come and heal him. Just as he had said to the leper, "I will, be thou clean," he said to the centurion, "I will come and heal him." You feel how in the individual consciousness of Jesus that life power just gathered momentum. Or when Peter's mother-in-law was healed, it was said that Jesus touched her hand. You see again, it was Jesus' activity to do something. He was impelled by the life power to heal. You have afterwards the story of the many that were possessed with devils, and it is said of Jesus, he cast out the spirits with what? With his word. Again, with the word of life. He just spake and it was done. So, or the next one, when Jesus stilled the tempest, it was said he rebuked the winds and the sea. And you see, the execution of his power, of his life impulsion, and just tackled the situation with a great command. We have the healing of those two possessed with devils. And Jesus just told them, "Go into the swines." And the swines went down the hill and were destroyed. See again that impulsion of life, go to nothing. Huh? And finally, we have the healing of a man sick of the palsy. And Jesus said to him, "Thy sins be forgiven thee. Arise, take up thy bed." See again that command. Huh? Arise, take up thy bed. Can you see there are about seven different cases of healing, and they have all that one great touch that out from the individual realization of the mind power, of the life power, came that command to be whole. So to say, he projected upon humanity the life power, and so gave them the fullness of life. What did I say? Let's read again what I said under life. Perhaps we understand it now better. I said the impulsion of life, demonstrates the fullness of life, small l, individually. In each individual case, his one great source and well of life just flooded the individual situation with a great sense of command over the situation. We'll see this now, especially when we compare it with the next healings in truth, where I have recapitulated it and said, the acknowledgement and affirmation of the Christ truth in man has a regenerating and resurrecting effect. Can you see now, this is something quite different. Truth is the factuality. So here Jesus appealed to the Christ consciousness in the patient. And he appealed to that Christ consciousness in the patient, which would affirm a new sense of life, a positive sense of life. The healings that we get here are no more so much that Jesus went and said, I will come and heal him. He is now seeing that the truth is the fact about everything, and that the truth consciousness in Jesus and in the patients are really that which gives life or healing. I said in the summary here, individual experiences are here shown in which the Christ consciousness in the patient is appealed to, and thus a new sense of life is affirmed. I just give you a few of these incidents just to show that in these incidents, Jesus didn't say to the patient, I will come and heal you, but that he appealed in the Christ truth, in the Christ consciousness in the patient, said, that is really that which heals you. For instance, we have the call of Matthew here. He called Matthew, and then it is said that of Matthew, he arose and followed him. See, he did something. He actualized his Christ consciousness. He was not just appealed to, but he did something. Then we have here the eating with the publicans and sinners when he was reproached for doing that. And then he said, that only the sick need a physician. He could see that those poor, the sick, that they need the physician, that they are longing to be healed. He said then in that relationship of putting new wine into new bottles, showing that we need new bottles, not only the new wine. Jesus was giving the new wine. That is the life impulsion to give the new wine of inspiration, but that we also need new bottles. There must be a new receptivity. There must be that Christ consciousness which is willing to accept the new paradigm. Each one must be willing to have a new consciousness. He could see that. He could see that he couldn't just put the new wine, the life impulsion, into a consciousness which was not willing to receive the divine Christ consciousness. You have the woman with an issue of blood for 12 years, and there again, you can see it very easily that it wasn't Jesus that really healed her, because the woman said, if I may but touch his garment, I shall be whole. You see, it was all about the patient. If the patient could touch but the Christ's garment, then the patient would know I'm whole. A wonderful indication here of a completely different state of healing, namely that the arousing in the patient, that if the patient can get hold of truth and can touch truth and affirm truth, that the patient knows, then he will be well. Can you see how different this healing is than, say, with the centurion's servant when Jesus said, I will come and I will heal him. Here it is, the patient that said, if I can but touch the Christ's garment, then I will be healed. We have here the incident of Jairus' daughter, who was 12 years old, was raised from the death. It has a lot to do with 12 here, all in this thing of demonstration. And it is said, and Jesus took her by the hand, and the maid arose. See, you have Jesus giving her the hand, but the maid had to do something. She arose. She could rise to the Christ consciousness. If only we can sometimes touch that in the patients which can arise the patients to his sonship in God, his Christ consciousness, his realization and identification with the Christ itself. Or we have those two blind men who were healed, and Jesus said to them, believe ye that I'm able to do that? You see, he asked them even, how different than to go to the blind man and say, I come and will heal you. He said, do you think that I could do it? You see? And what he wanted to do is to arouse those blind men to be conscious of their stature of manhood. And so they said, yea, Lord. They had to affirm the truth within themselves. Yes? Or perhaps this one, when he was saying that the harvest truly is plenteous, but the laborers are few. You could see the laborers are few. Those who will acknowledge and work for the Christ idea, they are few. He could see the life impulsion floods everyone. The harvest truly is plenteous. That's the life sense. There is the fullness of life everywhere, 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 everywhere. There is no lack anywhere. The question is, are there workers? Are there those who affirm and admit and acknowledge the truth? And he says, but the laborers are few.